Today's podcast is brought to you by the Herzog Foundation. Well, during the Biden administration, close to 500,000 minor children crossed the border unaccompanied by parents or a relative. Many of these children were placed into unvetted sponsors and unfortunately were trafficked. Today, an expert will discuss this issue. Plus, she'll tell us how to protect kids from online sexploitation, which is one of the greatest dangers to our kids. Stay with us. This is the Moms for America podcast. Each week, leaders and everyday champions tell personal stories, share advice, and tackle the issues most important to moms. Hi, moms. I'm Debbie Kurlaitis, your host, and welcome to the Moms for America podcast. So glad that you mamas are joining us again this week. Every episode, we get together to inspire, encourage, and educate moms and their journey through motherhood. Well, today we are going to have an incredible discussion with Allie Hopper, who is the president and co-founder of Guard Against Trafficking. This nonprofit organization combats human trafficking through research, education, and action. Now, Allie has testified before the Senate subcommittees several times about the abuses to children who poured across that border without their parents. She also is an expert on the grooming and sexploitation of children, which is truly one of the greatest threats to our kids and our families today. Well, Allie, thank you so much for joining us on the Moms for America podcast. You are a friend of Moms for America for many, many years, and we're delighted. We're so proud of you, what you're doing in this arena. So special welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Deb. For anyone that doesn't know, I actually used to be with Moms for America, and they taught me and gave me so many tools and education materials and ways to get involved. And this is a product of that.
It sure is. And that I know, Kimberly, we were all just really railing behind you when you said you wanted to really save the children and get into this this crisis that is happening all across our country. So we've been watching you. We've got so much to talk about. But first of all, yes, you're in Florida. You're a mama. Tell us a little bit about your tribe.
So right now in Florida, we started a nonprofit called Guard Against Trafficking, and it is a 501c3 that is focused on the ground research that we conduct in the area. That research is conducted domestically, internationally. So we've been to Mexico, we've been to Central America, we've been to South America, Thailand. And really what that research does is it allows us the tools and findings to be able to create the education materials that we use to educate lawmakers, law enforcement, and community members, including moms, dads, and age appropriately children, on the issues that exist out there, the dangers that exist out there. And lastly, our third piece is the consulting solutioning as far as advocacy comes. So we'll go up to Capitol Hill, we'll testify to certain subject matter hearings that are related. We'll also consult on certain pieces of legislation, which I'm sure we'll get to later. But that's really what we do here with Guard Against Trafficking.
Well, this there's so much to talk about because just before we started the recording, it's just such a weird world right now. It's very dangerous and it's very daunting for parents on many levels. But I kind of want to start with a little bit of the beginning of this because the evolution of sex trafficking, the evolution of the phone, the crisis that we're in right now, the hypersexualized culture that we're in, it stems from so many things, and we're going to talk about those. But you have been really testifying before Congress, advocating, educating about what is happening and what has come over the border during the Biden administration. The children that came in, these sweet little children that came in unaccompanied or with a cartel or with a coyote, handed over to who knows where, 479,000 children, right? I want you to kind of paint a picture because we've heard about the open borders under Biden, and I think we're concerned about obviously criminals coming over, which so many have. President Trump's doing a great job now trying to find those and send them on their merry way. But we haven't talked maybe about the children as much. Tell us just kind of a broad picture of what happened at that border, the children that came across, and the crisis that really was, far beyond anything we could ever imagine.
Yeah, so to take a step back, this isn't a partisan issue. This is really just looking at it holistically and understanding that this was a major problem. And unfortunately, it was under the past administration. When you have an open border, like was had a couple year or in the past administration, you lessen some of the restrictions as far as DNA testing. You don't conduct meaningful and thorough background checks of the people coming into your country. It creates this intense flow of people coming through the border that you don't know who they are. So, like you had mentioned, that's cartel members, that's bad actors, that's criminals. They literally had people from countries where they were emptying out their prisons, and all of the criminals were coming into our country. And then you have unaccompanied children, and these children are ranging from 2 to 3 all the way up to 17, 18 years old. We don't know their stories. We've struggled with figuring out what countries of origin they come from. And really, when you encourage people to cross a border, that's a harrowing and dangerous journey. And people don't really understand the journey and the dangers that lie ahead. I've walked these very paths. I've seen signs of exploitation littered everywhere. I've seen signs where children were present there at one point, and I've seen unaccompanied children with slips of pe paper in their hand given to them by the cartel members of who to request to be their sponsor. So when you have an open border coupled with pulling back the restrictions on background checks of sponsors, when you have lowered the threshold and no longer do DNA testing, that
Which
is
was
when
so
you
important, right? Because you have no idea whether these children that are being manipulated and taken across the border or even with a family member at that point. You have no idea.
Exactly. And so I had testified in September about this very issue, how this became an assembly line of exploitation, how it started with their journey all the way to the border, how the cartels and smugglers benefited and profited off of it. Once they got to the border, Border Patrol took over, handed them to Health and Human Services, which then sent them to an NGO for about 2 weeks. And then the NGO sent them to their sponsors. But the problem is that there was no accountability and oversight for every step along that way. So you have these gaps and these missing components in each transfer of this child. And that's how you end up with children being sent to known MS-13 gang members, cartel members, registered sex offenders, and really to the
Sold into
point,
the system, sold into the system, right?
lost into the system. So not every one of those children are being trafficked, but it's really hard to put a number on it because you don't know. When you say on the news that 320,000 children are unaccounted for, that means you don't know the welfare and the well-being of that child. You don't know if they're going to school or if they're being fed or if they have clothes on their back and a roof over their head. And so that really was a blemish, worse than a blemish, but just a mark and such a negative mark on that administration that when Trump came in, he had to immediately close the border. He had to stop the bleeding, and that was that influx of individuals crossing over. So we've seen a significant drop in people crossing. We've seen a significant drop in unaccompanied children coming across the border. And now our federal agencies are tasked with not only deportation efforts to get the worst of the worst out of our country, they are tasked with finding these children. And
That's my question. That's what I want to go to right now, because you have this influx of children that have settled somewhere, and many of them are being trafficked and they are being abused, in trying to find hope. I mean, you've got these kids could be anywhere. We have no idea. Have they found any of these kids to any degree? Are they trackable? Can we help them? How, as every mother would be, I mean, the border open is a crisis, but now we have these babies here, these little kids, and with dangerous people. A majority of them, I would say, probably, and in horrible situations.
Yeah, and really what's important to realize is that it's not just a border state problem. These children were shipped to every single city, every
Sure.
single state across the country. And so when
I
we go
Ali
in.
in my area, there was a van pulling up right down the street, and everybody was getting out of a van with backpacks on, with some kind of card they gave them to go and stay at a kind of a flea bag hotel, on the wrong side of town, and someone actually shot this footage, and they had little kids with them. So there was like 15 men with backpacks, two women and a couple of children getting out of this beat up van in the wrong side of town. God knows.
And what's really what makes it worse is that when we were at the border, me and my business partner, Dr. Jared Sadolsky, when we were at the border, we saw the border littered with identifications and passports. And what we came to learn was that there was a massive number of identity laundering going on. So what that looks like
Yeah,
is
what is
that
that?
if a individual, man, woman, or child wants to change their identity or is actually being forced to change their identity, the cartel can give them a new name, a new date of
Okay.
birth, and
Wow.
specifically a new country of origin. And why that's important is that when you have people coming in from countries that are designated as terrorist countries, they are more terrified about not being let in, right? And so they
Sure.
would change their country of origin to Mexico or to somewhere that isn't designated a terrorist country, on top of the fact that you have grown adult males that are changing their date of birth so they appear on paper as minors. So really, the only thing that was
Wow.
accurate and true on that new passport was their photo. So why
So
that's
now they're aliases, so you can't find them at all.
exactly. And we spoke to a Border Patrol agent that said if their passport said their name was Mickey Mouse, that is what went into the database.
Jeez. Okay, so now with the Trump administration, I want to get to your testimony at Congress, but now President Trump has changed a lot of these things back. So it is tighter at the border, thank goodness. And it is much tighter for these children that could be picked up on a street and carried across by who knows who, right?
It is. It is. And the cartels know this. They're very much aware that there is tighter monitoring and observation at the border. They're less emboldened at this point in time. We have been told that they're waiting until this administration is done. So they know full well and are hoping that an administration, usually what's been articulated to us is a Democratic or liberal administration will reopen the border and allow them to continue operations as usual. But what that means for these children is that the Trump administration is trying to go and find these children. Why the identity laundering is important is it becomes a challenge to find these children because their names, their date of birth, their country of origin was wiped from the record and recreated in a fake way. So now you're trying to track down not only these children that could be under a different name. The sponsor vetting was absolutely abhorrent. I will tell you that it was easier to adopt a dog from a shelter that was about to be euthanized than it was, or it's easier to sponsor a child. It's harder to adopt a dog from a
Okay, I was gonna
shelter.
say, boy, when I adopt my pup, it's like I gotta have references, I gotta know I got a fence, I gotta make sure. I mean, it is not easy. So,
They didn't
pau
do any of
contraire.
that. The meaningful background check wasn't completed. The home studies weren't completed. They didn't do background checks on all of the adults in the household. They didn't even do a home study to ensure that that wasn't an actual address. We had children sent to empty fields. We had children sent to addresses that were later identified as strip clubs. One of the HSI agents told us that one of the addresses that were listed where they went to go check on the well-being of a child was a Burger King. So that is how the sponsor vetting went down. I'm sure if you went to try and adopt a dog at a shelter, they would be doing the background check, the income verification, They're even checking on what other pets you have in the household. They
Right.
didn't do that with these
Children, the
children.
whole thing. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I mean, we've heard how bad this is, and it's terrible to hear this, but thank God that President Trump is rectifying this with that DNA and the background checks and all those things, and make sure that the person that's coming across the border, are any of these people that did come across the border were any, I mean, some of them were parents with their children. Not usual though, you know?
Not typically, but yes.
Yeah.
And it is hard to actually put a statistic on that because of the lack of
Yeah.
DNA test. So I
Right.
remember having a conversation with someone, and they were saying that they had walked through one of these intake facilities in these shelters where they saw families grouped in there with their children. And I said, well, let me stop you there for a second. Are you sure that they were family units, or were they set up to appear as family units? Because you're more likely to get permitted into the country when you're coming in as a family. And so
Right.
cartels knew this. And unfortunately, Deb, it was paid for by our taxpayer dollars. So we paid for this. The cartels knew that they could use taxpayer funding to transport children across the country on the
Right.
backs of taxpayers.
Absolutely, because that is our team that is accepting them and trying to figure out what to do with them. Obviously not good. But the fact too that, and I've heard this from other folks that are in this arena like yourself, that if the cartel, the coyote, whoever that is, you know, takes children with them, they're treated better, facilitated much better than coming in as a 22-year-old male by himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so people need to realize that the
Manipulation,
circumstances,
huh?
yeah, the
Yeah.
situation that children are put in now, many times they have a debt that they have to pay. They have a price tag on their trip. And so even if they pay that, they get fees and charges, additional charges put onto their tab. And so when they get into this country, that is when the cartel member, the smuggler, will say, all right, time to pay up. They know that these people don't have money. And so that is when it transitions to trafficking situations. And so it's not just sex, you'll see labor trafficking. We actually referred a case to federal agencies because we became aware of a farm in the Midwest that had 117 children that were unaccompanied alien children, and that they were being labor trafficked. The nurse in that community was pleading with every single person that they could to get awareness to this issue. And so these are the situations that when you have busts that go on in California and they identify 14 unaccompanied children, they are being trafficked. They are being forced to pay off their debt. They are not going to school. In a consistent way, and their welfare and their well-being is definitely a concern.
So disturbing. Your heart just goes out for these little kids. Ah, oh, let's talk about some of the testimony that you did before Congress. You've done three of them. So proud of you for
Thank you.
exposing, educating, and calling for reform. So, where do you want to start? You want to tell us a little bit about the first one that you did, and what was your message there?
So the first one was in November, and that was a congressional hearing, and that was focused on the unaccompanied children. So much of the information that we're talking about today was discussed in that hearing. But at the time, the Trump administration had won, but they hadn't assumed their role yet, so the border was still open. So we
Right.
were pleading with lawmakers to shut the border, to stop the bleeding, to protect children at all costs. And so that was what that congressional hearing was about, was really giving a voice to those children, what they were encountering, what we saw personally. When we went to the border, we saw unaccompanied children. We saw what appeared to be family units crossing over. We saw smugglers. We actually saw through the border wall a child appeared to be about 2 years old that was being handed through the panels of the border wall to a woman and a man on the other side by a masked cartel member. And when we pointed our phones in his direction to snap a picture, he just flashed the peace sign at us. Well, that was because he knew this past
They didn't
administration
right.
wasn't going to do anything.
Right.
So he didn't care.
All right, moms, right after this short break, we will continue our discussion with Allie Hopper from Guard Against Trafficking. You're not going to want to miss this. Stay with us. Hi, moms. I'm excited to share some news about our new sponsor, the Herzog Foundation. We know you're passionate about raising patriots and empowering your children with the best education possible. And the Herzog Foundation shares that passion. They're dedicated to promoting liberty through education freedom and helping parents like you choose the best educational path. They offer a powerhouse of resources designed to support families and schools alike. Whether you're ready to dive in headfirst to the world of education or simply looking for more ways to empower your child's learning. From free training events to their must-read online publication, The Lion, they're committed to keeping you informed about what's happening in education. Also, if you've ever thought, moms, about starting your own Christian school or co-op, their School Box online course will give you everything you need to get started on the right foot. Again, we are so proud to partner with the Herzog Foundation, and we encourage you to explore all their amazing tools and the insights that they offer. So go ahead, visit herzogfoundation.com to learn more. You won't want to miss these incredible resources. Again, find it all out at herzogfoundation.com.
You know, I've never really felt comfortable sharing pictures of my kids on social media. Then I found Tubu, a premium social app with an actual authentic community. No bots, no one trolling me or my family, just clean, wholesome content you can trust.
All right, well, welcome back. Before we continue our interview with Allie, I do want to remind everybody to please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your mama friends and your mama circle. Please, this is how we get our information out. So again, please like, subscribe, and share. Also, if you have an idea or a topic for our podcast, would you please email me at podcast@momsforamerica.net. Love to hear any of your suggestions or feedback. And then lastly, I want to invite all of our moms that are listening to join the movement here at Moms for America. Boy, I surely hope that you're a part of our sisterhood. I hope that you're a part of our, I call it a conservative support group. It's moms like us. We're uniting all across the country. We're fighting for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. So please join us, join the movement, and take advantage of all the incredible support, information, webinars, and seminars that we have for you moms. How do you do it? Super simple. You go to momsforamerica.us, you sign up for our newsletter, then you'll get our information every week, and you also get anything that's happening in your state, our summits, and then there's also a place we can sign up for someone to get back with you and help you join a group or start a group in your area. All right, here we go. Now back to the show. Now let's fast forward a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the great things that you're doing in legislation and all that. But I do want to talk about your second and your third hearing. Some of these have gone viral of your testimony because it's so moving and it's so appalling, but yet so... I mean, it's information that all of us have to know because, like you said, these children may be in our state, they're in our country, they're in our state, they're probably in our city. They could be right here, the beggars that we see, you know, downtown Chicago. We don't know. They're here. And so what was the second testimony about?
So the second testimony was in July, and that was in front of a congressional hearing again. That one was, it was the... The topic of the hearing was on NGOs and their involvement in the unaccompanied alien children program. And
tell us what an NGO is, so our moms know.
Yeah, sorry, nonprofit government non-governmental organization. So a nonprofit tends to be a 501c3, and so really, what these organizations were they were getting grant dollars. Grant funding through the U.S. government, yeah. And they were operating these influx facilities and these facilities, and they were that point from Health and Human Services. They were overwhelmed, inundated with the sheer volume of children that they started issuing out contracts to these nonprofits, to these NGOs. And When I tell you, it wasn't just in the millions, it was in the billions
I
of
heard
dollars,
outrageous funding, yeah.
billions of dollars that were going to these NGOs. And what happened in these NGOs, not all of them, some of them were fine, but the ones that didn't, that operated at some of the highest levels, that took some of the biggest contracts, it was absolutely abhorrent how they were managing these contracts. The executives were enriching themselves. They were giving themselves six-figure bonuses. They were charging the US government a steak and lobster diet while feeding the kids a rice and beans diet. These children were being neglected. They weren't being cared for. There was no meaningful background checks on the sponsors they were going to. And so, really, it was a prioritization of speed over safety. So, they wanted to get more kids in and out because that meant more money. And so, when nonprofits turn into an assembly line and they're just focused on getting children in and out, so that that means more dollars. Then you're not focusing on the well-being of that child. That is what the hearing was about. The hearing was about these contracts that were issued. The hearing also highlighted how there was a notice of concern hotline
Yeah,
managed
let's
by the
talk about
past.
that.
Yeah, it was managed by the past administration. And what this hotline was it was set up for unaccompanied alien children, parents, sponsors, community members. To be able to make calls if there were areas of concern. And what this administration, the Trump administration, uncovered when they took over was that between April of 2023, or I believe it was April or August, to the inauguration, that there were 65,000 unanswered phone calls. So
I
some of
mean,
those.
just think about that. 65,000 unanswered phone calls, crisis calls. And dropped calls, missed calls, no follow up. Even if, when they're when no, nobody is taking care of the 63,000, you can just imagine what was the ones that we can't account for, right? Just a mess.
Yeah, and some of those calls ranged from complaints about stale bread all the way to children making calls saying that strange men were coming into their room at night and were touching them. And it's heartbreaking because these calls weren't listened to, but when Trump came in, his team came in, they went back and listened to those phone calls, and they were actually able to rescue some children from those calls. From those calls, they were able to identify where the child was and be able to do an investigation and ultimately rescue the child.
And there is an investigation on this hotline and what happened with that still to date. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, as I'm hearing too. And what about now? Is there one that was terrible? Thank you for testifying on that. And two, is there a new hotline now where that is being managed properly and correctly, from what I understand?
I believe that there's a new contract that has been signed. I am not aware of who has signed that contract, but what I would encourage this administration to do is to put in place processes and procedures that assure accountability and oversight, because that is really r the root cause of how we ended up here. There was no accountability, there was no oversight, there was no follow-up to ensure that what you promised you were going to do was actually being done. And so, you can sign a contract with any new company or organization, but you're not going to know if they're effective unless those accountability measures are put in place. So I really hope that with this new contract, that those measures have been put in place to ensure that what they say they're going to do is actually being done.
Please, God, yes. All right. So that was the second one. Was there anything else there before we go to the third one?
So it was a 3-hour hearing that turned into 7 hours. What was disheartening about this, Deb, and I will be very honest, is that it was an opportunity for both sides of the aisle to come together and really focus on the children. I mean,
Yeah, this
if
shouldn't be partisan. This isn't about right or left, this isn't about anything but besides these kids that are here now and addressing them. I don't know how everything becomes political, but surely it sure does.
Yeah, and really at the end of the day, if the one side wants to say, Well, let's just put aside whose blame it is, whose fault it is, but let's just focus on finding these children. That would at least have been a step up from what was displayed publicly in front of the American people. What actually happened at that testimony, it was the left was stonewalling, they were distracting, they were disrupting, they kept referencing the Epstein files. And that wasn't the subject matter of the hearing. That's a slap in the face to these missing and exploited children because you're deflecting from and distracting from the actual subject of the hearing. Have a separate hearing on the Epstein files. That's fine.
Right.
But this hearing is not about that. This hearing is about
Sure.
children. And so I was disheartened that even something that should seemingly be so uniting as protecting children, wasn't able to unite, both sides and have a meaningful conversation. There was a lot of good pieces that were brought to light for the American people that really needed to be shed and needed to be heard. But it was disheartening to see. But I will
Yeah.
say this to your audience, Deb, it is a hard subject to hear.
It
But as
is.
someone that has personally interviewed incarcerated traffickers, my business partner and I have interviewed, we've been face to face with incarcerated human traffickers. And they thrive in the darkness. They thrive on people being uncomfortable about this conversation because that allows them to continue operating in the dark. The only way we can eradicate this problem and protect all children is by having these open and honest discussions about it. And so I really appreciate you having me on
Yeah.
and your audience tuning into this episode because that is the only way that we can start to move the needle and push back on this atrocity.
We've got to shine the light, like you said, in the darkness. And that, and I know pieces from that did go viral from your speech on that second one. I was watching it myself. So thank you for being the light there, and really kind of, it's a horrible conversation to have. Who wants to talk about this? But this is where we're at, and this is what needs to be exposed, and this is what needs to be fixed, and we need to save and rescue these kids and make sure it doesn't happen again. Now, you also did another, you're back before Congress another time recently.
Yes. So in September, I was testifying in front of the Senate, and it
Look at
was on the
this.
Unaccompanied Alien Children Program again. And again, it was stressing the same information, stressing the same concerns. And it's frustrating because what we want to see is accountability. We want to see oversight. We want to see justice for these kids. But until we fix what's broken, we can't really expect that accountability and oversight to be had. And so in that hearing, I would encourage your followers to watch it. We actually gave tribute to Charlie Kirk because he told
I saw
us
that.
to be courageous in what we want to
Sure did.
pursue. And we honored him in that. It was a week after he had passed, and we wanted to remind the American public that it might be tough, but you need to be courageous because that is the only thing that's going to really make a difference.
Yeah. And courage is contagious. When you see someone speaking out, it just does something to your soul, and it gives you that extra bit of strength and tenacity to speak up. And Charlie did talk so much about that. I know he's having a wonderful time there in heaven because he did such great work here on this earth for Jesus and for our country. So he did. He talked about so much about being courageous and about even this topic. So that was wonderful to pay tribute to him. Let's talk about some of the amazing work that you're doing currently. As moms, we want to know about this because you're working on legislation. Should we start there? Should we talk about the legislation that you're working on? Because this
Yeah.
affects all of us. This is the answer. Like you said, what are we going to do domestically here in our country now to either help protect the innocent child that children that are here, save them, rescue them, because my God, what situation are they in? But those kids and this culture is affecting our kids in our home because this is a sexual exploitation. This is on our phones. We know that sextortion is all of this is like at a record number
because of the complete downfall in our society, spiritually, really. So where are we at with legislation?
So I believe it was about 2 years ago we had introduced legislation in Florida, and that was a grooming bill.
I remember this.
Yes. And what it did was it created a definition for what sexual grooming was, and it was to protect children from adults sexually grooming them. And unfortunately, in most state criminal codes, we've examined multiple states, there's a gap or a loophole that bad actors and pedophiles exploit, knowing that law enforcement really can't intervene until certain criteria is met, like luring, enticing, solicitation, obscenity. And so they know that there's this area that they can kind of operate in. And so we ended up creating language, bringing it to the Capitol, getting it introduced, passed, and signed in under 8 months. And what was interesting is we ended up going to a law enforcement training and conducting a law enforcement training in Florida. And this was sometime after it had passed. And we had mentioned the grooming bill, and a sex crimes detective stood up and said, "Whoa, wait, you're the one that introduced that." And I said, "Yeah, why?" And he said, "We were following that piece of legislation since its inception. We knew the effective date. It's absolutely brilliant, because 3 days after, we were able to arrest a John, 39 years old, that was sexting a 15-year-old student." And he said, "We wouldn't have been able to intervene until that conversation had progressed and drastically hurt that child." Now, that's not to say these conversations aren't going to harm a child, but it bites the head off the snake before that snake bites someone.
Yes, so revolutionary as far as cracking down on the sickos.
Yeah, and really what it does is it establishes a definition, and it establishes criminal penalties. So in Florida, it's a felony 3. At the same time, we were working with an Iowa state rep, Mark Thompson, and I remember the conversation vividly. At first, he was like, "No, Iowa has this. We've got to have this. I'm on the human trafficking. You know, I've introduced a bunch of human trafficking legislation. Like, we have to have this." And I said, "Here's what I'll do. I'll do a statutory analysis of your criminal code, and I will pick out the strongest statutes, and I will show you where the gaps and loopholes are." So I did that. I sent it to him. And then the next response was, "All right, can you send me that legislation?"
Yes.
And Iowa got it passed at the same time Florida did. And I was so pleased to find out this past legislative session that they've actually been adding to it. So Iowa is actually taking it one step further and making it stronger for the children in Iowa. So it's gotten passed in Florida. It was already in existence in Illinois, but it's been passed in Florida. It's been passed in Iowa, Arizona. There's one in Montana. There's one in Georgia. And so, you know, state by state, we're gradually providing protections for these children. And
for our moms too, I want to mention this. You take this, I worked for a state rep for 7 years, but you take this model legislation.
Yes.
And they can bring this to their state reps, to their state, right? Yeah. They can take this model legislation, they can contact your organization, and this is how you do it. And it's very simple when you have model legislation. Those legislators do not have to create, it's ready to go. They can make it better, and they can add to it, but model legislation like this is how you take it step by step, state by state.
Yes, exactly. And what's really nice about this legislation is that other states have already passed it. Some states are already actually using it, making arrests on it. So it's a proven concept. It's not just a unproven concept. So states that decide to take this on can feel more comfortable in the fact that there are other states that have already done this. And what we're trying to do now is create a federal grooming bill.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of interstate, cross state lines grooming that happens. And it's a really big challenge at the federal level to address that, especially when you get into grooming online. When you get into some of those scary components online, the internet is very scary. And we train so many parents on the dangers of the internet. And we were speaking off camera about this, but I was telling you that it was no longer just the concern of the white van at the end of the street or sitting down the street at the park. It's the white van in your living room. It's the cell phone in your child's hand. It's the laptop on their lap. It's the gaming system that's in your living
Sure
room.
is.
And it's right under your nose. You're not aware of some of the dangers of these applications. And it's
And
such a challenge because some of these applications, as quickly as you figure out which ones are dangerous, there's new ones that pop up, and they're all of a sudden you have to learn what's up and coming.
terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. Yes. And parents can't keep up with this. Parents are having to make hard decisions about what kind of technology they're going to give their kids. Now we've got AI that can be just such a great asset in so many ways. And it's here. We have to figure out how to live in this new AI world. But yet, AI, there's so many deep fakes. There's so, I mean, you can create anything now. And we were talking about a little about this, and I was at the White House when the First Lady, announced the take it down bill with President Trump, and that is a safety net for sure now. So if there's any kind of deep fakes, pornography happening, you have to take it down, I think, within 24 to 48 hours, and that's some great legislation. But there's so many other aspects. It's the kind of what you were saying. There's so many gray areas now that you can do cyberbullying in so many ways. And is it really called sexual exploitation? And what is it? And what's happening with AI now? I mean, what are we going to do with that within in this world?
Yeah, there's a lot of dangers of AI right now, and I know that there's a lot of lawmakers out there that are trying to create legislation that offer protections. Some of them offer age verification, things like that. And I do want to thank, Melania for spearheading the Take It Down Act, because that's huge. That's absolutely important and critical for the protection of our children. What we want to do is introduce a protecting minors' likeness in AI, which I can go into in a bit, but it kind of takes that Take It Down Act one step further. So when you think of your likeness, who you are, it's your face, it's your voice, it's your personality, it's your demeanor. And so there have been situations where someone takes an image of your face and is able to create a photo or a video without your permission. Take a clip of your voice and actually make it say something completely different, because that's your likeness. And so really, we want to ensure that children and their likeness is protected, and it allows parents the tools to intervene, like we said, in cases of cyberbullying. So let's say that your child gets their face taken from a photo and superimposed on that of a pig, and it gets circulated in their school. You have very little recourse to be able to do anything about that. But with protecting minors in AI, that gives parents the tools to intervene if they want to. It gives them the explicit
Support.
permission that until a child is 18 years old, that you must get a parent or guardian's permission to use a child's face or voice in an AI manner. Otherwise, there's penalties that are outlined in this legislation. So it really gives the power back to the parents, and that's where the parents it needs to be. And
It
then once
does.
a child turns 18, then they can decide what they want to do. But until then, it gives the parents the ability to decide that.
And it's kind of reminding me, I've worked in media for 25 years. And if you ever went into a school or you went into anywhere and you were going to, video or photograph these children, you always had to have permission, parental permission,
Yes.
especially if it was for any type of agenda or a product or school promotion. And so now with AI, there is no parental involvement because everything's on the wild, wild west, this crazy thing called the internet. So thank you for working on that. Please keep us updated on that. We would like to sign on to that. Any of those pieces of legislation, Moms for America, we sign in support all these legislative pieces that are so important for our kids. Let's talk about some of the training that you're doing too around the country, because this is helpful for moms, law enforcement, teachers, really society.
Yeah, so what's interesting about the legislation and training piece is it really goes hand in hand. So when you're introducing legislation, it's helpful to assume that the lawmakers you're talking to know little, very little on the subject matter that you're talking about. When you're talking about grooming, so what we did was we educated the lawmakers. Well, what is grooming? What isn't grooming? What could grooming lead to? What are you trying to prevent? So it's not just combating, sex trafficking scenarios. It's combating a whole long list of scenarios that could actually happen from a child being sexually groomed. We see this right now where children are being sexually groomed and then they end up getting pulled into the furry community, things like that. So when you're educating people on these things, it helps to gather a stronger understanding. And we take those pieces and we educate community members, moms, age appropriately, students, and we show them what it looks like, what it is, what it isn't, what are the signs, how to protect yourself. And so we educate people on things like grooming, sextortion, like you had mentioned. The FBI actually declared at the beginning of the year that sextortion is one of the greatest and growing online threats to teenagers across the country. And
Explain
really,
sextortion because it's a term that we hear a lot, but I don't know what would be the best definition for that.
so the easiest way to explain sextortion is through an example. So
Okay.
an adult, a bad actor creates a Facebook or a, we won't use a specific media, a media account online, a social media account online. So whether they use an AI generated photo or a photo that they took from somebody else, they create a profile online. What they do is they embed themselves into an individual's community. They identify a victim that they want to target. Usually it's someone that is looking for friendship, someone that's looking for conversation, topics that they enjoy, games, similarities, things that they enjoy that are similar to someone else. They're looking for community. And so these bad actors identify that. They can embed themselves within friend groups. If they're online on Roblox, they can embed themselves within group communities online. And so what they do is they befriend somebody and they get them to communicate via phone. And it tends to start off very innocent. It's general communication, and then it escalates through that grooming, that manipulation into, okay, well, I'm your age. I'd love to see a photo of you. Send me a photo of you. So then that relationship, those demands start to escalate into sending more explicit pictures. And these teenagers think they're communicating with another teenager. And then they find out that this isn't another teenager, this is a grown adult. And when that happens, either they're extorted or sextorted. So they're extorted for money, they're extorted for more images, they're extorted for trafficking. And the story of Teresa Flores, that's exactly what
Yeah,
happened.
tell us that. Tell us that.
Yeah. So Teresa Flores was your average student from a middle income community, parents were together, a very good, strong household. And her story was a little bit different. Her exploitation didn't happen online, but it resulted in photographs being taken. She was drugged, raped, photographs were taken. And then the sextortion came. The, if you don't do what I tell you to do, then I'm going to release these photos to your dad. Your dad's going to get fired. Your parents are going to be embarrassed. The community's
Destroy
going
your
to know what
life.
you did. The school is going to know. And so they said, we want you, whenever we text you, you need to climb out your window and we will tell you where to go. And so she was sex trafficked for a number of years before law enforcement was able to rescue her. But some of these cases don't end that way. They end with children taking their lives because they can't
Yeah, they
deal
can't. How
with.
would you even, how would you even deal with this as a child? I
Yeah,
mean, there's
and
so much coming at our kids. What are you doing with your kids with technology? I mean, we have had on everyone with everything from go to flip phones, go never bring in technology to your home. I mean, there is so many opinions on this, and it's just it's daunting. I mean, my guys are now 21, 25, and 27, so I'm not that this doesn't continue to tempt all of us, this whole crazy world. But if you've got a little one or you got kids right now, you've really got to make some very, very tough decisions.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why we work across the country to train parents explicitly on these issues. These are the hard to have conversation type topics, but they need to be discussed because that's how we learn to fight back and protect our children. One of the training sessions that we were at, we were teaching on sextortion. We were showing parents what the signs are, what to look for, what does it look like. And one of the parents actually went back home, looked through her child's phone and identified that her child was being sextorted. Her son was being sextorted, and through the communication, was within days or weeks of taking his own life. This was communicated back to us by the mother saying, "Thank you so much for this education because I was able to intervene before my son took his life." And so now her son's on the path to recovery, but still understanding what those signs are, understanding what those
Can you
risks
tell
are.
us those? Tell us a little bit. Let's close with some advice, Allie. We've covered every topic that we can fit into this interview, but I do want you to give us some advice here at the end for our moms because we're talking about the whole sexual situation from these kids coming across the border, being just terrorized in so many ways and abused, and it trickles through. It weaves itself through our culture right now, and it is feeding it. Yeah, so a lot of people, talk about these, the kids that come across and they use those for sexual and they put that pornography. It feeds this demand. It feeds this demand of what's happening in our culture. So how do we stay aware? And what are some of your advice for our moms here in closing? And of course, your website.
So, first and foremost, obviously, every family unit operates differently. What works for one person might not work for another. In our household, our children don't have phones. They have watches, and they are the kid-friendly watches because you can't really scroll, you can't really download games. It's really hard to pretty much communicate on the phone other than the approved context that we add in there, but there's not internet access on those watches. So that is the method that we've chosen for our family. That has been a solution that we have suggested to other family members are that if you need to be able to maintain communication with your child, look at the different options for watches. The other thing that we've suggested is the Bark phone. They have a lot of technology. They have a system that you can attach to your router to ensure any internet access that's going in and out of your house is going through this Bark system. They have a Bark phone, they have a Bark watch. So they have a lot of options that are really valuable. But the last piece that I would suggest is a program called Cell Phone Permit. And I am not an affiliate of them, so I don't make anything. But Cell Phone Permit, and I bought it myself, is when I was in church, a pastor had come in. He was a guest pastor and he was speaking. He actually developed this program and it's called Cell Phone Permit. And really, what it does is it trains the child on safe internet measures, how to use a phone safely, how to use the internet safely, how to prevent things like sextortion, cyberbullying, how to have healthy conversations. And really, I find that tool valuable because when a child hits a certain age, you know that you're not going to be able to shield them from the internet because that is the future. And so, how do we encourage children to learn about the dangers in a productive and efficient way? It's much like a driver's permit and a driver's license. You wouldn't just hand the kids the keys to your child without going through driver's education school, getting their learner's permit, getting their driver's license. So, cell
I haven't
phone
heard of
permit,
this.
it operates like that. And it's an amazing program in this guy that created it, his name's Jason. He has eight children, and he said what he does in his household is that he did have a child that misused their phone one time. One of the repercussions was he said, "All right, you need to retake cell phone permit course." It's like retaking a driver's education course. And so logically, that makes sense for our 16, 17, 18-year-olds that are walking into the next phase of their life of they're shifting from high school to exploring college options, exploring, college courses in a high school setting. And so how do we train our next generation to operate in this environment, knowing that AI is the future? We aren't getting rid of it at this point. So how do we protect them in the best way that we can? And what I would encourage is the parents to take this course with their children, because then you're learning alongside them healthy internet practices. So when you see something that isn't being completed in a healthy way, it also raises a red flag in your mind. So those are the three things that I suggest.
Great advice. Great
Thank
advice.
you. And really just understanding that at the end of the day, you pay your child's cell phone bill, you pay for the internet. We need to get rid of the concept of being a helicopter parent. When you are involved in your child's life, what conversations they're having, if they're on their gaming system, understanding programs like Discord, and you're giving them access to the internet, you're giving bad actors and pedophiles and predators access to them. You're literally opening a door in your house and allowing whoever to come in. And so we need to understand this, and any access that we grant these kids, we need to be aware of what, could
In
potentially
full
come
control.
through. Lastly, what I would say is that my faith is very strong to me. Like, it's very important to me, it's very important to my family. So we weave and align every single lesson in our household in with faith, with God, that he's always watching, and that even with him always watching, he wants us to make the best decisions. And so every lesson is weaved in with a learning opportunity aligned with faith. And so
Amen.
weaving that in is extremely important. Because at a young age, you're developing a strong foundation in faith. You're developing a strong foundation in a higher power, and just establishing good moral and ethical values. But to touch on the last part of your question, where people can find us, it's guardagainsttrafficking.org, and all of our social media is on there. And we have everything: Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. We're trying to meet people where they're at and educate people in the best way possible. So we do have all of the social medias. Feel free to follow us. We put out information all the time. And I just want to thank you so much, Deb, for having me on, because
What a great interview.
these conversations are tough, but I really appreciate the willingness to have these conversations.
Absolutely. Wow, what a plethora of information. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being a warrior. Tell your team thank you from all of us at Moms for America for fighting this fight, defending children and protecting families. So God bless you. And hopefully we're going to make some great strides here with legislation. Again, let us know how we can help promote and be a part of saving our kids, protecting our kids, and preserving America. So God bless you, Allie.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Allie, again for an incredible discussion. Boy, we so appreciate the work that you're doing. And moms, again, share that podcast with your friends because it was packed with information, and especially information that'll help you parent your kids in today's world. Whew. All right. Thanks for being a part of this program, moms. For more information, again, go to momsforamerica.us, sign up for the newsletter, get our amazing programs, our resources, our support to help you in your journey through motherhood. Again, momsforamerica.us. Please stop by there. As I always remind everyone, we have everything from parental rights to public policy, from the kitchen table to Congress. Moms for America is here to help you in your journey through motherhood. All right, moms, I will see you next week. Like, subscribe, share, and as always, let's keep changing our country. What? One home at a time. You got it. Thanks, moms. See you next week.
A special thank you to our sponsors, the Herzog Foundation and Tuvu. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers
and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the Herzog Foundation.